Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, Jacob, Aki, Bree. How are you three doing?
Pretty good.
Aroused.
Well,
I'm not asking.
I think we can end the show now.
Yeah, we tried.
All right. Wait, hold it. That was the secret all these years. I just had to announce that I'm aroused, and we're like, all right, we're done for tonight. Ah, jeez. Could have saved us all a lot of time.
You're bad at this.
I mean, yeah, I'm
so bad. How was everybody's week?
Pretty good.
Up and down.
Why I went and took a class. Oh, go ahead, Aki. Yeah.
I got some good games in for review and bought a game that I wanted. And then I got some good and bad information today, which was fantastic. I don't have an eye doctor's appointment tomorrow, which is great, because I would have been real pissy for our interview if that was the case. But it's because they don't take my insurance anymore. Yay!
Oh, no.
Yes, no. Yes, now I'm going to a new place that I've never been, and I'm going to have to deal with new people who are probably going to treat me like shit because they won't believe that I have eye problems, because that's kind of how it always fucking works when I first go to places. Mm-hmm. And, it just fucking sucks. But otherwise, you know, and then there was, you know, a lot of really sad things that happened this weekend. That
I figure we're waiting until
we'll
news.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the news,
Yeah. But, you know, in a couple days, I'll also get a really cool model kit in. So I'm mostly happy, but there's been some down points, too. Bree, back to you.
I was going to say I took a class on green screens because I haven't played with green screens since I was in college. And that was a long time ago. And so I was seeing how easy it is to do green screen work nowadays with just your phone and like CapCut or TikTok's tools if you want to use TikTok, which you don't. Just like using, you know, a high-end camera and some other stuff, like it's pretty easy. One of my nearish libraries has a green screen room. And so they were teaching the class there, and it's like useful for people to use and, you know, do interviews and videos for, I don't know, whatever. It was pretty cool. It was very easy.
I'm going to ask something personal again, because it's me. How long until you know about the job?
Oh, I may not hear anything like one way or another until at least next week. Yeah.
I want to know. I just want to know now.
I know.
Yeah, I would wager that Bree also wants to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slightly important information. Just a little bit.
But yeah, I'm gonna go there again on Saturday and take a crochet class. So they all seem very friendly there, and I'm happy going there and learning in that space and sharing in that space, regardless, because it's part of my localish community. So I'm pretty excited about that either way.
Very cool. Nice.
I wanted to learn how to crochet, but
yeah.
My grandma got rid of literally all of her stuff like a year or two before I asked her to teach me.
Ah, yeah.
And it's because I got some really cool. I got a stingray plushie that was crocheted by somebody at one of the art shows, and they had like dinosaurs and stuff. I'm like, oh, I want one of those. And my mom was like, you should just learn how to do it. And grandma can teach you. It's like, okay. And then, of course, she had already gotten rid of all of her stuff because she has, you know, arthritis and shit. She's in her 70s. So,
yeah. Like,
oh, man, of course. I might need you to teach me how to crochet then.
Yeah, maybe I can make a video with some green screen in the background and change it to something super cool. I don't know. Like, I could do a volcano. I could do, like, you know, Endor, and just, like, have Ewoks, like, running around in the background.
You would have to be wearing your Ewok costume for that, though.
I could do that. There is a video. There's a video out there somewhere from a college class that I had to do a paper for on juggling, where I was struggling to get this video done for credit for the class, and I had to write a whole paper on the, like, neurological processes of learning things. And so I was struggling, and I got in character instead, and I put on my Ewok costume. And so there's me juggling as an Ewok on video somewhere out there on someone's computer.
So I'm assuming you had an easier time juggling as an Ewok than
I really did. I really did. Yep.
I love that. That's fantastic.
I just loosened up. Yep. Totally helped me.
Incredible. I got a new mouse pad. Ordered.
Nice.
Yeah, is it a booby one or a booty one?
It's a booby one again. For the longest time, I would use the Record of Agarest War mouse pad that came with the 360 game, and it was a booby mouse pad, but it was really comfortable, and it, you know, it worked well. I couldn't find one recently, so I switched to a different mouse pad. And it, like, has a slant on it instead of a drop off where the wrist pad is. And, like, when I'm playing stuff, I'll hit that slant and the mouse comes up and loses connection. And it's a pain in the ass. So I can't wait to get a different mouse pad back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Booby and booty ones are nice because of the little cleft in the middle. Because it gives your wrist an actual place to sit. I hate the ones that are slanted because it's just one straight thing, and it's like, that does not feel fucking comfortable at all.
But I still have my Record of Agarest War limited edition.
Nice. Let me know if you ever plan to sell it.
I
just bought the mouse pad off of Mercari for $15, so I'm happy.
That's it? Damn it.
For a mouse pad, yeah. Just the mouse pad. I mean, that collector's edition isn't worth hundreds of dollars or anything.
It's not?
No.
Oh. Agarest War 360.
Plus, you got to remember how poor condition so many of those were.
What do you mean?
Because of the box.
Oh.
Having a friggin' folded up mouse pad inside in a pillowcase. Those boxes collapse like crazy.
Oh, I had a documentary on it. Nice.
Mm.
Yeah, so, yeah. I'm getting that, and I am getting a import 360 game called Every Party.
It is never heard of that.
It is a Japanese board game, and the Asian version, like the Taiwanese version, was released with Chinese and English content.
Nice.
So I am grabbing that in English, and I am going to give that a go and throw that bitch on my gamer tag.
Okay.
And how long does it take to
complete?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't even know if it's completable because there's online stuff. I would need to organize 4-player online games. Like
dozens of
them. It is a very valuable game.
Yeah.
You aren't going to just casually get it for $20. You'll get the Japanese version for a cheap price, but the Taiwanese version with English, I got it dirt cheap because the spine is sun damaged. That's about it. The disc looks in good shape. The rest of the artwork looks in good condition, but the spine is heavily sun damaged. And instead of like $250, I offered $85 and he accepted.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I've had a guy on Discord offering me for the past, like, 2 years, every so often, he'd be like, $150, I got a copy. $175, I got another copy. Do you want it? I'm like, dude, I can't afford that much.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's expensive.
Good Lord, it is raining hard here.
Wow. Yeah, that's what happens when you're having thunderstorms.
Flood warning in effect. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, we had one. We have one up until 10 o'clock where I'm at. It doesn't look like there's anything that's online only for that every party game.
There is.
You should.
Because it's like public lobby.
Public, yeah. I see it now. Public hall. Okay. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. So I'm not going to aim for a completion on it, but I do want to play a few rounds. It's like having Tetris Grandmaster Ace on my gamer tag. I've wanted to play that game for so friggin' long, and I finally got my hands on a Japanese console, and I played it, and now I have it on my tag. I'm never going to complete it because there's a lot of online stuff, but oh well.
Yeah, I can't do that. That I would lose my fucking mind.
Plus, all the achievements are in Japanese, so I don't know what most of them are.
Mm. Oh, well. So you're just unlocking everything by pure luck.
Anyway, should
there's
we
translation apps for your phone? It'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's guides on true achievements, but I just don't care enough.
Oh yeah, there's that too.
I just want to play games. I don't care about completions.
Fair. I would really like to still be in that mindset. That would make my life so much better. So much better.
I kind of figured you were going to get in that mindset soon with the impending burnout on your end.
No, I still want 100% everything I own. It's very fucking irritating. I look at all the games I have and I'm just like, God, I don't want to play any of these, but I also want to 100% all of these, but I really don't want to play.
Move on and forget about them.
Nope, can't do that.
But you already have.
No.
Or you would have played them already.
No, some of them I've just given up on and it still bothers me. No, I know a lot of the games that I still haven't 100%ed, and it because they fucking annoy me, because it's fucking obsession. It's obsessiveness. I feel the need to do it. So the fact that I haven't done it, it's still in my mind because it pisses me off.
One day you'll get over it.
I will get over it one day because I will 100% it one day.
I found some middle ground somewhere.
You found a happy medium?
I did.
Bree's healthy.
I complete the ones I care about. Like, if I think I could complete it, I'll go for it. Like, Beatdown City Survivors. That was a fun one. I was like, I could get this. Mm-hmm. So I got it. No More Slimes. We're going to talk about that later in the show. I should have that, but one of the achievements is glitched. But
word? Yeah. Which one?
It's a 15-pointer. I don't even know what it's for. I think it's for having all the relics.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I have 985 out of 1,000.
That lose donkey bears.
Yeah. But should we get into news? We have a lot of news we got to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
A lot of news, a lot of reviews. We'll start things off with the sad stuff. It was a very sad week for celebrity passings with video game relations, as we lost a crazy trio of Dolly Parton, Tim Curry, and Peter Cullen.
Yeah.
Those hurt.
Yeah, but Tim Curry and Dolly Parton were both 80, and they died the same day, but Tim Curry's people waited to release the news until the day after. But yeah, I was going over the list of Tim Curry's video game stuff. He did like Wing Commander 3, the Command and Conquer Red Alert 3. Command and Conquer 3 Red Alert, whatever.
Yeah, everyone remembers that one.
Yeah, everyone remembers that one. I was going to say, that was a game that almost ended a relationship, so I remember that. Brutal Legend. Double Fine actually made Brutal Legend free for 666 minutes this morning to honor him.
I think it was last night that happened.
Yeah.
Well, they launched like it last night, but something. Like East
yeah,
Coast,
like 3 a.m. or something.
Yeah.
Dragon Age Origins and like 15 other roles he did.
Gabriel Knight series.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the Muppet Treasure Island point and click adventure.
Oh yeah, all right. I was going to say, people say you can tell a lot about a person by how they know Tim Curry. Like, what was your introduction to him? Mine was probably The Worst Witch, a 1986 movie featuring Bruza Bulk, and Tim Curry was the Grand Wizard.
For me, it was The Hunt for Red October.
Yeah.
Although,
I don't know if I remember the first thing I've seen him in.
Although the thing is that my favorite role is the Sylvester Stallone comedy movie Oscar. Like, he plays Dr. Poole, who's like a linguist, and it is the damn funny. Like, it's one of my favorite comedies of all time, and everyone sleeps on it because they say, like, they see Sylvester Stallone and they're like, oh, fuck that movie. But like, Sylvester Stallone is like, he's great in it. Like, he's fantastic. And like, Tim Curry playing this like linguist who's trying to get, you know, Sylvester Stallone to speak properly, while also like dodging romance advances, you know, it's fantastic. It really, like, check it out if you haven't already.
Yeah. I think the first thing I know him from was probably from that game, but only through like YouTube stuff, because until then I didn't. Like, I had probably seen him and stuff, because I'm sure I had seen the Muppets, Treasure Island, which he was part of. But I didn't, like, he wasn't a thing for me until that. And I just saw that on a YouTube video one day, and I was like, oh, that's fucking hilarious. But other than that, it's probably Rocky Horror Picture Show. I haven't consumed very much of his stuff, sadly. He's great, but I just...
Yeah.
I just don't remember roles that well, because my aging brain sucks.
Yeah. And then Peter Cullen, you mentioned Thunder too. He was known for voicing Optimus Prime. So that was a big thing. He also did Eeyore in the movies and games. He was 85.
They're taking the wrong 80-year-olds.
That's the fucking truth.
Yep. I was surprised how little voice acting Peter Cullen actually did for video games. Like, he did like a ton of Transformers stuff, but other than that, it's like only like one or two. And, you know, you think with as much voice acting as he had done, like, I didn't think it would be as limited to cartoons as much as it was.
I now know the first thing I ever saw Curry and Ferngully. For sure. Yeah. That was definitely the first. I fucking loved that film as a kid. I watched that all the fucking time.
I did not like Ferngully.
I loved that. I'm a dork, so.
Okay, well, it's not movie watch, so we can't talk about movies all night.
You know, see, I always knew that something was off about Aki, and now I know what it is. She loves Ferngully.
Yep.
There's a lot off about both of you.
Like, what's off about me?
Everything.
First off, your hair.
What about my hair?
Second off, your face.
All right, first off, you're just jealous, baldy.
And
I mean, he might have a point there. You are very bald.
I am very jealous of the hair, but you still look ridiculous.
Yeah, you're with very hair. You're jealous of my luxurious locks.
No.
You wish you had my curls.
So Gamescom happened.
Yes,
it did.
Brie, you took a lot of notes on Gamescom, yes?
I didn't, but Aki consumed like 12 hours of Gamescom stuff in a couple of hours, and it's all fresh in her head, so we should probably let her talk a little.
Oh, no.
Just brain dump on us. No. I took notes on the things I was interested in for Xbox releases.
Yeah, that's mostly all I want is, like, highlights. We don't need to cover everything at all.
No, certainly not.
Because
certainly
when not. We do that, shows turn into three-hour marathons.
Yeah, true story. Well, I can give you my highlights real quick.
And
I focused on, you know, what was coming to Xbox mostly, but the Seance of Blake Manor comes out in October. Pretty hyped for that. That looked really cool. It was like a comic book animated style horror sort of thing.
What's the one in? Ghost at the Grand is December.
Yeah.
I was getting those two confused.
Yeah, but it's like set in Ireland in like the 19th century, and you have a, like, someone's disappeared, and there's all these, like, you know, supernatural kind of things that you're investigating. It looks really cool. Holsten was another one. It's like a detailed pixel. I think it's actually voxel with like pixel filter for the art style, but it's got that pixel art look to it. And it's like a psychological survival horror. And that's coming out next year. We Were Here Tomorrow comes out in October, and I need it. if you've never played any of the We Were Here series, like, they're really fun. Amazing. You have to have at least two people to play. Obviously, you can like take turns with other friends and like replay it for achievements and take turns on different sides of the
usually you do, because usually there are achievements for,
yeah,
both
for both sides. Yeah.
So,
but this is their attempt. They're stepping away from fantasy and they're going into sci-fi, and I'm like super excited. Yeah. Speaking of sci-fi, Star Wars Galactic Racer. Yes.
Hell yeah.
New game for sure.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And then there's Rivage, I think was what it was called. It's a sci-fi puzzle adventure where you're on like a space station or something. That looked really cool. And I think the last one I wrote down. Yeah, it is a puzzle adventure. Tanuki Pond Summer looks super cute, and I wanna play that one.
Yeah, that looked like a U game.
Yeah. You're like a little tanuki and you deliver mail. It's cute.
Very cool.
Anybody else find cool highlights?
Aki, any highlights on your 12-hour binge?
That I did in like an hour and a half. Yeah. There was Blackwood and Spine Gun Fu, which are both John Wick style games that looked really good. There was Arizona Sunshine, a co-op enabled zombie survival game that looked really funny. Ritual Tides, a horror survival game, reminds me of early Resident Evil style stuff. Alien Deathstorm got a big, heavy, in-depth look at it. It looks pretty cool. They talked about Alien Isolation 2, Tomb Raider, Lost Atlantis. Both look great.
I totally forgot a game.
Oh?
Kingdom 3 Rising Realms.
I can't believe
I forgot that. Yes, I love the Kingdom games. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I thought that would be one Joe might like too.
I could never get into the Kingdom games.
Is that the Kingdoms like Two Crowns thing?
Yes.
Okay. I remember reviewing that, and I'm like, I have no clue what the fuck I'm doing or what the hell is going on in this game. But I'm somehow succeeding. That was weird.
Yeah.
I thought Fable looked pretty good. All the Fable
footage
they've been showing.
Yeah, there was a multiple days Fable was on there being talked
about. I'm just disappointed that it got pushed back again, and I just want it to come finally.
I'm sticking with my thoughts that it should have never been announced for PlayStation. This could have been a killer app for Xbox.
Yeah.
Could have been huge, but nope. Thanks, Phil Spencer.
Then there was a new game announced, Djinn of Gods Neza, which looked really cool. It's a Chinese, I believe, game where you're playing as a demon god thing. I don't really remember. We saw more on Valor Mortis, more on Tides of Annihilation, which looks awesome as well, more on Song, more on Blood of the Dawnwalker, which looks great. Exodus was shown off. It kind of reminds me of Mass Effect. There's a new D&D style game called Warlock Dungeons and Dragons, and in it you play as a hot magic wielding lady who just kills everything, and it's fantastic. And then Showa American Story. We finally got some more information on that, and it's been a few years. It's basically, what if the U.S. was taken over by Japan forever ago, and now there's a crossing the country style story where you're destroying stuff? So it looks really cool. No Law, a cyberpunk game that looks really cool. Yeah. It's a shooter. And the only other one that I had realistically speaking, was Ontos, which is a Kepler game. It's another one where you're on a space station trying to figure out what happened to everybody.
That seems like its own genre at this point.
Yes, yes, and I fucking love that genre. Some of the coolest puzzles come from that shit, because you have fucking, so often there's no gravity sections, and those are always really fun.
Yeah. So, Grand Theft Auto 6 had their big reveal this week.
Yeah.
I didn't give enough of a damn to watch. I'll be honest.
I watched a synopsis video earlier of the whole Netflix thing.
How long was the Netflix thing?
I don't know. I watched a 10-minute video where people covered the highlights of it. I have a friend who watched the whole Netflix thing, and he said it was awesome, and he can't wait to see the game. He says, like, the way things are fluid and movement and background NPCs and just everything that you can do is pretty impressive. Like, the scope of the game is really, really impressive. But
I have so little interest in it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, you either are really interested in that game or you really just are not. There's not really a middle ground for that one.
I feel like I'm broken because everybody, like, it's the biggest thing in the world today and I don't care at all.
No,
same here.
Same.
I've never played a single GTA game.
I have, but not a lot. I played enough to know that it's not my style of game.
I liked 3. I wasn't as big a fan of Vice City. I thought San Andreas was cool. 4 was kind of boring. 5 was super pretentious. And I just, like, they're too big. They're too... Rockstar's getting this issue of making shit too realistic.
Hmm.
Like, I don't want to walk like a human in a game. I don't want to lumber slowly and, like, mash a button to slowly hobble faster. Like, just let me run like a normal video game character. Like, Red Dead felt so slow to me because of how deliberate everything felt in that game.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, PlayStation Plus monthly games for September were announced. They are getting 4 games this month with Sniper Elite Resistance, MLB The Show 26, Wobbly Life, and Chained Echoes.
Chained Echoes is good, and that's the only one of those that I know.
Mm-hmm. You don't know Sniper Elite Resistance?
Nope, never heard of it. Never, never, ever. I didn't review that at all. And therefore have no opinion on that matter, because we already know my opinion on it.
Wonderful. So yeah, good month. Solid month for PlayStation Plus. MLB The Show is pretty neat. So I might double dip and play that a bit on PlayStation. Xbox. They put their 25th anniversary console on pre-order today, and it sold out in minutes. A $900 console sold out in minutes, and there are plenty on eBay at triple the price if you need one.
Yep.
Oh, so it was scalpers. Okay.
Mm-hmm. How
wouldn't it be?
How have these big companies not learned a way to deal with that yet? Or, like,
they do. They don't care.
I guess. I don't know.
I just think it's really stupid of the scalpers to be getting these, because this is already really deep into this fucking console's life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everyone who wanted one probably has had one for a not insignificant amount of fucking time.
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who are like, Grand Theft Auto's coming out. I've been a PC guy. How can I get a cheap Xbox?
Yeah.
People still want to get in on PlayStation and Xbox all this time later because of Grand Theft Auto.
Is that not coming out on PC?
No.
Oh. I thought that was coming to everything. Okay. Nope.
PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series. That is it.
I, I, I still think a lot of scalpers are going to be left with their dicks in their hand and a whole bunch of ungodly overpriced Xboxes that they bought that they now have to sell at cost.
I don't think they will, because this is a set limited serialized console. Like, they are individually numbered to 25,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So these are not going to just sit around in scalpers' closets. They're gonna sell. And it's gross.
I've never really understood the concept of a console that was super limited. I've never really gotten that, because for me it's just like, I want a console because I want to run it.
It's meant to be a limited anniversary item. It's not meant to be their new model.
Yeah,
just for me, it feels weird, because it's like, I wouldn't want to use something like that. And it's like, that defeats the entire purpose, though.
I'm using my Galaxy Edition.
I mean, my Xbox 360 was the Halo 3 Edition.
Of the Halo 4 Xbox 360.
Which, in retrospect, was a really dumb fucking purchase, because for the same amount of money, I could have gotten a 120 gig hard drive. And it's not like that limited edition console didn't even come with the fucking game.
Oh, that's some bullshit.
Yeah. That was this is proof that time travel is not invented while I'm still alive, because there's no future me going back into 2007 and be like, no, don't buy that one. It's a piece of crap. It only has a 20 gig hard drive. You need more. As I fade into like the vortex.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Terranigma Rebirth was announced. Oh my god. I can't believe Terranigma, which is the third game in the Soul franchise between Soul Blazer, Illusion of Gaia, and Terranigma, never came to America. Super Nintendo game, Japan and Europe. That's it. Never came to America. 2027, it is releasing in America.
That is awesome. I don't remember if I asked this, but are the other two on Xbox?
No.
Okay. I wonder if they're going to bring those to Xbox to go with.
I have no clue. This. Maybe if Terranigma does well, because it's being published by Clear River Games, but this is a Square Enix game. So they are licensing out to a third party to handle the re-release of this. Kind of like how the Front Mission games come from Forever Entertainment.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah,
so I don't think we're going to get like anything close to what people are expecting out of a Rebirth, like compared to some of the other remakes we've seen from Square Enix. From what I could tell, this is a straight port running on an emulator. Like, it's even in full frame 4:3.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They didn't even modify it for widescreen.
Not what I expected.
I'm not expecting a huge amount of features in this thing, but it's finally releasing in America, and as long as it's affordable, I will absolutely jump on that one.
And even if it's not affordable, you'll probably still jump on it, realistically speaking.
Probably. I'm expecting 20-30 on that one. I think a $20 price tag would be good for what it is.
Yeah, that seems fair, I guess.
And then last bit of news I have is probably the most interesting news of the week. Xbox has officially announced their disk-to-digital program is launching to testing, insider testing, on August 31st. It will roll out to a larger audience later in the year. We don't have all the details yet, because testing didn't start yet, but the way it seems is you pop a disc into your console, it triggers a download, which activates I don't want to say permanent, but a permanent revocable license onto your account. So you can use that content on any other, like Play Anywhere or any other console that you're signed in. It's basically a digital game from that point on.
Goodness.
If you ever give the disc to anyone else and they put it in their console and activate it, you lose that license.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how it's a permanent license, but revocable. So if you give it to someone else, you lose it. But as long as that disc stays on your shelf and doesn't go in another console, that's yours.
Very nice.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited. I have a couple of discs I'm going to pop in my console next week if I'm part of the testing group, because I'm in the Alpha Insider ring.
Nice.
I'm hopefully going to see if it works. And, you know, I have like the Marvel Pinball Epic Collection is a disc only Xbox game. Not released digital at all.
Okay.
Yeah. It is a separate achievement stack. It's a compilation of a handful of the Marvel titles from Zen Studios, just packaged together in one disc, and it has its own achievement list, and it's just its own product, but it's not available digitally. Same with, there is a European version of Tower of Guns that is only on disc. Yeah. There's a couple. Not many, but a couple.
I'm thinking of my Xbox collection, and I'm just like, I think the only thing that I have on disc that I don't have digitally as well is that, like, it's DCL Drone Racing League thing.
Oh, God.
That you had me pick up for, like, $5 or whatever. Yeah, and I'm just like, yeah, if I throw it on my console and then, you know, sell off my thing, and then somebody's like, ooh, I'm gonna play this on my Xbox Series X, and I lose it, I don't know that there's really much of a loss there.
Yeah, I have to imagine that for games that are physical only, I assume you're not going to be able to get a thing for those. I assume those are just going to continue to be physical only.
Yeah, we'll find out.
There's not a digital like thing for that game.
I think I have a new use for this that just hit me. I own the Borderlands Handsome Collection on disc.
Nice.
But if I want to play it while I'm on vacation with my S, I can't.
Yes.
But if I get the digital version, I'd be able to play it on my S as well as anywhere else in my house. Correct. Without having to put the disc in. And that's kind of a nice luxury there.
Yeah. Hold up, because is that because the Handsome Collection is a Series X disc?
Well, like, because you can't put discs on an S.
Because the S is the digital only, hun.
Yeah.
Oh, aw, you called me hun.
Yeah.
Aw.
So yeah, that gives me a lot more ability to play some of those games that I wouldn't be able to play while I'm traveling, like I have in the past. So yeah, because my Series X is not moving. I'm not traveling with that. It's staying right where it is, nice and safe.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use my S for travel too. The X screen. Yeah. Oh my God, I love my X screen. Did you look into one of those yet?
No, I have another solution that was gifted to me by Lloyd, actually, which is just a USB plug-in screen that I have, so that I can just plug that in wherever I go. And it's about the same. It's a little bit bigger than like my laptop screen, so it's a little bigger than the S, but it's a nice little portable screen.
You know, I was thinking of the Xbox One S. That thing had a disc drive. That's why I was confused.
Yeah, I mean, they did name things in a confusing fashion, so it's not just you.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. Xbox One, last gen. Xbox Series, current gen. The end.
Yeah.
It's not that fucking hard, people.
Yes,
there's a one and there's a series. They're both S and X. Okay. There's two models. A cheaper one and a more expensive one. That's what the S and the X stand for. That doesn't change that one is last gen, series is current gen. Ignore everything else.
Pinky bananas.
Yeah. If you can't get that, I'm sorry.
I haven't had to think about it in like, shit, like 6 years at least, because I haven't fired up my Xbox One in that long.
Hey, you don't need to. Why do you even have an Xbox One?
Because I haven't sold it yet, and like we had considered the possibility of like giving the kids a console to fuck around with, but
We still have two Xbox Ones in the house. One's in the bedroom, and one is in the living room.
And they both make handsome doorstops.
No, we use them for like playing games. We use them for watching videos sometimes instead of a DVD player.
That so, makes sense to have them in multiple houses, but if you just have one sitting there not being used, like
why?
I don't really use mine, but it's still plugged in, so is my 360.
See, my 360 is hooked up because there's a lot of games on 360 I can't play on my Series. Yep.
Same.
Big fucking shelf right next to me full of games that I can't play.
That's pretty much the only reason why I still have a 360 and my OG Xbox, because, you know,
I still hope they bring more games to the backward compatibility program. It seems to be getting lost in the shuffle with everything else getting announced, but I'm going to keep hope alive for that one. I want more BC titles.
Yeah,
give us some of the Activision titles that you have the rights to now. Like, why isn't Legend of Spyro playable? That's an expensive game, too.
It is?
Legend of Spyro? I think it's like 50, 60 still.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, that is my news. Aki, what do you have?
Nothing. Everything I have goes with Brie.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Aki, do you have an update on that Shop Crush game? Because we were supposed to discuss that on the show.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, I do not have an update for that now.
Based on that trailer that came out.
Oh, the trailer looks a bit better. They did take some of the things that I suggested and recommended to them, which were all like, I have bad eyes, and I know people who have bad eyes, and people who are photosensitive, so change up some of these things, and it'll run a little better for you, so people can actually look at it. Beyond that, there wasn't a great amount of difference that I saw. So, yeah, but it was nice to see that they took out some of the things that made it really hard for me to actually watch the trailer. They took and modified some of that for me, which was nice.
Yeah, I know the dev has been in contact with me. He is excited to get any feedback he can because he is specifically working to improve things that you are mentioning to him.
Yep.
So you have the developer's ear on this one. You can help make this game as good as it can be. So
yeah, I gave him again, we've been talking the first time when he was like, what are some things from the game and the trailer that you would recommend change? I gave him like a two-ish page worth of stuff that I was like, hey, here's some problems I ran across. Here's some things that aren't very well explained. Here's some things that I think would make it a little better if you change this to do this, that, and the other. And some of the stuff was already planned and just wasn't in the demo. Like, for instance, how I mentioned how everyone seemed to hate me really easily and I would die in the game. That's because at that time there was a global hate meter, basically. So anytime you pissed anyone off, it subtracted it for everybody because they were all going off the same fucking thing. And in the main game, each one of them is going to have their own.
That makes sense.
So I brought that up and he was like, yeah, no, that was something that's just in the demo, just because we didn't have the ability to actually get that in there for the demo. I was like, oh, okay, thank God, because holy shit.
They are addressing a lot of the issues that you pointed out, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So,
yeah, it's nice. I can't wait for them to have it closer to out, or maybe out, and to take another look, see what all's happened with it. I'm kind of low key excited for it. It's still not my style of game, which is, they know that already.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping with the changes that I suggested, that the people who would be more likely to get that, it might pop for them a little more. Cause right now, from the demo that I played, they were like, not quite far enough in some areas that they needed to be that would really entice that style of player to play the game. And I was like, well, you can go this route or you can go this route. Both of these, this would excite this type of player. This would excite that type of player. And he was like, yeah, that is definitely something we're going to look into. So I hope that he manages to get the stuff in and they're able to get something nice out that will really excite people, because he seemed like a pretty good guy. So I'm really hoping that they get what they need done. Yeah.
All right. Did you have any other? You didn't have any other news? No.
Nope. Everything I have is with Bree.
All right. I got one other quick thing. I just found out Grand Theft Auto 6 will be 30 frames per second.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not sure about a 60 frames performance mode. It will be 30 at launch. I'm sure the world is going to take that news relatively well.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I've never understood that. Like, for me, and it is 100% because I am blind as a fucking bat. Like, the only difference I notice between like 30 and 60 frames, or even 20 frames, which is really old games, the only thing I notice is you move faster. That's it. That's all I understand.
I notice the it's smoother.
Yeah.
Like the motion is smoother. I don't know. I've played on a 120 display and I've seen games in 120 and I've played games in 30. Yeah, they look better, but the people who say it's literally unplayable, like, shut up.
Yeah, no, that's lame.
I can't play games at 60 because I'm used to 120. Shut up.
Yeah, unplayable. Like, for me, as long as it's 30, I am perfectly fine, because for me, I only noticed that because I've watched the videos where, like, here's 30 and here's 60. And it's like, okay, you got to cross the street a little faster. That's all I've ever noticed. So I'm like, I'm fine with it being 30. That doesn't matter to me whatsoever. But I know for a lot of people who are excited for the game, that's probably going to really make them angry.
Yeah. Like, does the game work? Yes. Okay, I'm happy.
Basically, yeah.
Like, as long as there's no, like, single-digit frame drops, I'm happy with how a game runs, as long as it runs. I don't need to have 240 frames a second or whatever. I just, people go crazy over this stuff and I don't get it. Bree, what news?
All right. Well, I'll start off with the conversation I was having with Aki earlier. I was reading an article about Valve's Gabe Newell and their top lawyer getting into a tiff recently about content moderation on Steam. The lawyer apparently advocated for more moderation when it comes to things like porn games, and Gabe reportedly said, "What the fuck do I pay you for if that's your opinion?"
fucking hilarious.
What do you guys think? Should there be limits to things? Like, an example, like the game called Rape Day, which was removed from the site in 2019. Like, where is the line between freedom and legality, I guess, or even the boundaries of good taste? Should there be more firm guidelines for content on the site? I mean, like, what do you think?
Well, already you have to turn on to allow adult content. Mm-hmm. And as I've stated with the rise of, oh, we need your ID and a face scan and your fingerprint and blood work in order for you to access a fucking porn site in these states, we've already heard my opinion on fuck that. The internet was made by adults for adults with adults in mind. If we want to turn around and be like, well, we need to make it kid friendly. Okay, the way to do that is say, fuck off to the kids and not let them on the goddamn internet and leave it the fuck alone. We have made some safe spaces, but 99.99999 infinite percent of the internet is not made for kids or with them in any mind whatsoever.
Yeah.
We need to get rid of this silly, like, oh, porn's bad, violence bad. No, just let people enjoy what they want to plot, what they want to do.
The thing, I'm like, all there, for... There is a point, though, of, like, rape games. Like, we don't... Yeah. We don't need that.
Nope. And there's actually a... really fascinating like documentary that I watched once about porn and how it's judged. And basically, it all goes down to the legality of it is based on the, quote, community. And the hard part is determining what that community is for what rules those are. And so in the case of the internet, that's a much bigger community. And I think that that's part of, like, the hard line that people have been trying to figure out for years. Yeah, I know watching porn documentaries is wild. But, I mean, it's out there. It too. Yes. So...
Yeah, for science, of course.
For science. Yes.
For me, I am a psychologist. I've looked into the research on this stuff because that was interesting when I was in university. Mm-hmm. We have found, again, a correlation, not causation, because it is very, very hard to prove causation. But we found the more often people have access to the shit that gets them off or lets them, you know, fulfill whatever fucked up need they have, the less likely they are to go out and
do it for
do real. It in real life and cause yeah. a fucking problem that needs them buried under the prison for. So I am generally all for it. If you don't like that stuff,
don't use it.
Fucking buy it. It's yeah. really that fucking simple. I think for things like this, Steam has a thing that says, you know, this has sexual content in it, and therefore it's behind a thing that says you have to enable, you know, adult content. And lots of developers, and I think all of them should be doing this, I think it should be mandatory, but a lot of them dictate even what flavors of shit is in their game. Mm-hmm. Not all of them do that because that's not a requirement, and I think it right. should be, just because I think that...
Just like I think that there really should helps. Be a requirement that they... disclose things like AI nowadays, but
yeah,
go on. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think they should be forced to, you know, say what's in the game just so, you know, people know, because obviously you don't want to buy something thinking it's this thing. And then it ends up being that, like we had a game that I reviewed on here and it ended up, there was a lot of NTR stuff in it. And that's not really a thing I like. I don't like to be cucked. But lots of people like that, and there are a lot of games like that on Steam. And, you know, I think
see, getting, that shit is getting cucked isn't going to land you in jail, though.
True.
Well, no.
If you're, if your sexual fantasy will involve you going to jail, seek help. Don't make a game about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's a line with legality. I think if your fantasy is illegal, you should get help instead of making a game about your illegal fantasy.
We don't have any Kids Corner titles today, do we?
No.
I hope the fuck
okay.
not. Okay. I checked.
but for me,
thank it comes you, Marie, down for doing the for doing the legwork on that.
You know, correlation of they have access to it, they're less likely to commit a crime thing. So I am more for it being made for, hey, if y'all are into this, fucking have at it. Don't do it to real people type of situation. That's where I come at it from, is like, it's not my thing, but hey, if it's yours, at least if you keep it fucking there, you're not making yourself a problem for me or anyone else. And I'd rather them have access to that and do that and not be a problem. Even if it only protects one individual, be it child, woman, whatever, if it protects one, even a decade, that's still worth keeping at that point. If it even only protects one a decade, that's still one more that's being protected. And, you know, again, not for everybody. I totally understand where lots of people are like, it's objectively disgusting. I get that. I get how morally irrepresentable some of this shit is to a lot of people.
I'm not talking about morally and consciously objectionable. I'm talking about legally objectionable.
Yeah. Well, if it's a video game, it's typically...
Okay.
There's not actually a legal problem with it.
We can debate this a lot.
Yeah, this is going to go nowhere.
There's like First Amendment and, you know, all sorts of other crazy shit that we could get into. But yeah, I mean,
just because it's right doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
Or just because it's legal doesn't make it right. And I think if your fetish is something that would land you in jail, you shouldn't act on it, obviously, and you shouldn't find any way to promote that.
Yeah.
And making a game is promoting that, because that lets you do that thing that's illegal and will land you in jail.
Well, we do have a lot of other content, though. I mean, just to point out, though, I mean, GTA is kind of, it's a different animal to some degree.
Last of Us.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, even Wolverine, people think that one's too gory and too across the line. I don't know.
It's an interesting debate that will never end.
But it's probably something
I just don't believe in lines personally. I think it's more of the issue, because for me, it's literally just about, is it legal to consume it? Yes. Okay. Then it should be fine. Not whether it's legal to do in real life.
Well, there's also a difference between like moderating the site with good protections, like you discussed, and like banning the content at all. I think that there should be good guidelines in place to protect people, but for the most part, you know, within certain lines, I think it's acceptable to have it out there, obviously. So I don't know. Yeah. More positive news. So Double Fine is now an independent studio again, and buying their games will actually directly support them again.
Very nice.
Cool.
They're still planning to make weird and wacky indie games through their game jams and other ideas. They'll be doing a crowdfunding campaign soon for upcoming projects. So look for that if you're a fan of the studio.
Let's hope their next game jam provides something better than Kiln.
I mean, Kiln was a great idea in some ways and not so much in others, and it just fell flat. So that was a bummer. But yeah.
I thought they had gotten their stuff back like a month or so ago, actually.
It was recently, but they made an official announcement this week about it. So yeah.
Okay.
Some weird news for me. Secret Neighbor, the online stealth game, has gone offline in response to a hacker gaining access to servers and key infrastructure. The hackers have deleted files like player progression and in-game data, and they're blackmailing the publisher, trying to get the game delisted.
Wow.
Fucking what? Why?
I don't know. I'll have to look more into that when there's more info available.
I mean, aren't they trying to develop stuff like multimedia stuff? Like, because I thought that there was like
I
a
think so,
I thought
yeah.
there was like a movie or a TV show that
there
was in
was
the
a
works.
TV show for Hello Neighbor. This is Secret Neighbor, which is related to the same world. Specifically, the multiplayer Secret Neighbor is what they went after. I actually have a T-shirt about that too. So,
T-shirt about fucking everything now, don't you? Jesus.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty funny one. It says "Eat the floor, children," but that's a whole long story to explain
that to me.
So it was weird for it to come up in the news. Let's see. Another bunch of Cubite Interactive published games were removed from the Xbox store. This time, a bunch by Yaw Studios, namely Geometric Feel the Beats and the Hidden Shapes games, along with Shapeshooter from Nuke Games. Not sure if this is related to the other developer Rising Moon pulling their stuff off a few weeks ago. Something seems up with Cubite.
Yeah, that does not sound fucking good at all. Holy shit.
No. A Washington Nintendo Entertainment System games collector named Roger Holler had his entire collection stolen the other day. He'd been collecting for 40 years and only had 3 games to go to complete his collection.
Oh, no.
He collected it with his family over the years and estimated the collection being worth $50,000 to $100,000. He planned to pass the collection on to his grandkids to pay for their college. He's understandably devastated. Some collectors and other people in the gaming community, though, have donated their collection, and a content creator started a GoFundMe with their influence to help the man kind of recover a little bit.
How did he lose it?
It was stolen.
So it was, from what
he
I
had
understand-
a whole like basement like setup or something where he had all the stuff on the shelves, and the shelves are just fucking empty.
Hopefully, Gary will find that, because that has to be like something that's going to be easier to hopefully find the
culprit because shit, it's not like those kind of games go on sale very often.
Or knew about the collection.
Right. Because one of the things that I've heard is that he came back from vacation to find it all gone.
Yeah.
And the thing is like, so once again, folks, this is why you don't post vacation photos online until after you've come back.
Yeah.
Like,
But it's still, you know, endearing, I guess, to hear these stories of like people coming together and offering, you know,
always nice.
Thousands of dollars worth of their own collection to hand over because they're just sitting there or whatever. So, but yeah, that's just sad news of the week.
That story reminded me of one that I from a few years ago. There was a guy who made Lego. A whole bunch of different Lego things. He had a huge Lego collection. Someone came and stole it, and then people donated a ton of money to help him get it back on track. It's really nice. I love stories where we hear that people have helped. It's a shame they needed the help in the first fucking place, but
More bad news / discussion. Sony, with some poor timing after announcing that they're ending disc production, updated their terms of service to clarify that you don't own shit when it comes to digital purchases. They were quite clear about that.
I mean, we know that, but...
Yeah.
No, but they, like, extra posted it, and they were like, in your face, fuckers. I didn't
see that at all.
Yeah. And then more people around PlayStation were planning a blackout this week. It ends on the 30th, for people trying to, you know, protest the end of disc production. I don't know if it'll make a difference, but it is making a statement, I guess.
I joked around that I had to play my PlayStation to have a blackout first.
Yeah. Yeah. True story. Ubisoft did a big oops on Steam with the release of Heroes of Might and Magic 3 or the remaster or whatever it is. They forgot the actual game file in the download. So excited users of this nostalgia piece were greeted with a dummy executable file and no game.
Beautiful.
Oh yeah, that that definitely was that not a good one. Oof.
Whoopsie. I think they've probably fixed it by now, but
I'm sure they did.
Was like 2 days ago. So yeah, or a day or so ago, but yeah. And then my last bit of news is Atari is releasing working cartridges as part of a series to revive 39 Activision games. They aren't cheap. They're $35 a piece or group priced in four collections. It'll have games like Pitfall, Private Eye, Kaboom, Enduro, Pressure Cooker, you know, all these classics that you know from Activision Atari games. They all come with color manuals and boxes, and the entire collection can be purchased at a significant discount if you pre-order. It comes in at around $1,000, and it comes with an yet unnamed collectible item.
Nifty.
That's what, 30, how many games? 30 something?
39 total.
39.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool that they're doing that. I know Evercade's getting popular. I know they're starting to do reprints. It's cool to see this stuff coming back. I don't know how well it'll do on a mass market scale, but niche collectors are going to love the hell out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They could put them all on a cart. Yeah, they could.
On one, yes.
We could get a native download instead of that retro classics cloud game we have. It is so hard to play some of those games because of cloud.
Yeah.
But, oh well.
Yeah, anything that's else? It for me.
All right, nope. Jacob, what do you got?
I got nothing. Pretty much everything that
good.
I would have. Oh
no, we're like already over an hour.
I know.
Oh God damn it. Hold on. Let me see. No. Let me see if this news is actually true. Fuck.
What? Can you talk during this so that we don't have dead air?
Yeah. No. Okay. No, it's just dumb memes people are making.
Okay.
About Bruce Willis.
Oh. No. Yeah.
And I was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, stop it.
No, we know he's not doing too well either. So.
Well, yeah, he hasn't been for years. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, any actual news?
No, I don't have any actual news.
All right, are we good to dive into reviews then? Because we got a whole bunch of those too.
Yeah.
So no 15-minute ones tonight.
Nope, keeping them short.
Yes.
Fuck you. I'm going to talk for 20 minutes about everything.
If you go long on any of them, I will drop kick you in the ball sack.
Nice.
First game to talk about. Pack. No.
Yeah. You just said you would drop kick me. And you know what, Joe? I crave your touch so much. I'm willing to make that happen.
Doesn't mean I'm touching them. That means my shoe is touching your jeans.
But your shoe is connected to your foot.
First game to talk about tonight is iRacing Arcade, developed by Original Fire and Games and iRacing, published by iRacing. It released August 21st, Xbox Series X and S and PS5 for $24.99. iRacing Arcade is a third-person racer where your skills on and off the track shape your journey from grassroots racing to motorsport glory. Compete in races to earn resources, then decide how to grow your team. Will you invest in buildings to unlock boosts that give you a crucial track advantage? Or will you focus on recruiting top-tier drivers to compete for you in the licensed global series? Every choice matters. Build your legacy one race at a time. Jacob, what is iRacing Arcade?
So, for those who aren't familiar with it, iRacing, they make a lot of heavy-duty racing sims, like ones that like professionals actually use. They actually started, if I remember correctly, they bought like the source code to one of the early NASCAR games from like the 2000s, like, and they just like started working from that. There it is right there. NASCAR Racing 2003 season. They got the code to that, and then we're just building off of that. And pretty much they're known for, like, you know, the hyper-realistic racing sims that actual race car drivers will use to prepare for racing on various tracks and stuff. So, like, you know, what they make is nothing to sneeze at. But they have started doing some console development stuff. Like they do the like World of Outlaws. And now they're doing like kind of like an arcadey kind of release, which I'm not going to lie. I was real curious how that was going to go because, you know, especially with like you get companies like Milestone who make like super Milestone Italy who make, you know, all of those like motorcycle racing games where like they feel more like sims than anything, and it's just like an absolute beast to like try to get anything done unless you actually mess with the stuff and you know what you're doing. And I was really wondering how accessible this was going to be, you know, like with the arcade name slapped on the end of it. And so, yeah, so I fired it up, and one of the things I should let you know first right off the bat, there is multiplayer in this. You can do local, and you can do online, but online is like a lobby, like invite-only kind of thing. I don't know if they're going to improve that later on, but pretty much if you don't know anybody, you can't just randomly join lobbies. So,
you know. Matchmaking or anything?
No, there was nothing that was available when I was trying to play. You had to have a lobby code. Which, I mean, you know, if they're trying to get this toward like geared towards kids, I kind of get that then, you know, because then you're only playing against people you know, which is kind of cool. But yeah, so anyways, on to the actual like single player thing. There are multiple race modes. You know, there's like a free mode where once you've competed on a track and won, you know, you've unlocked it and stuff like that. And so you could go back and play various courses again. But the real thing that you're trying to do is the career mode, because that's where you really unlock all the stuff. And some of it is natural progression. Like you'll just unlock it as you do the quote unquote story. but other stuff you can unlock by just by buying it. Because as you're doing these races, you're going to level up with XP. You're going to get like X amount of money, and all that depends on where you place, and like the difficulty that you're racing on. There's amateur. I forget what the middle one is called, and then the other one's pro. And I stuck with amateur just to like see, you know, like it, are my kids going to like this kind of thing? And yeah, I don't know that they are, because this is, you know, it says arcade, but like when you think of arcade, you're thinking of like the Fast and Furious arcade, or like Cruisin' World. This is not like that. This is still very much a actual racing game. And so you're going to get like, you're going to need to get used to actually having to like, you know, gas and brake at the same time, or like, you know, you can't just like cheese it just by like putting your foot on the gas the whole entire time. You're going to like, you do that, you're not going to win. You're just going to get constantly penalized. And so like the first couple of tracks are very, you know, they're fairly easy, but pretty quick, like the game makes it clear, like you're going to be doing like actual, like, IndyCar racing kind of stuff, like the kind of like F1 racing that I, you know, years ago we've had me review it, and I'm like, wow, I really suck at this stuff, because, you know, I actually have to use my brakes. And so you'll get those kind of tight corners and turns that you will get in IndyCar racing, but they're definitely more manageable in this. The other driver AI, it doesn't really seem like there's anything to them. I mean, like, obviously they're going to compete against you, but it's not like other NASCAR games where we've reviewed in the past where, like, you can create relationships against, like, other drivers, and like, you know, they might have like a good opinion about you, or like, oh, they crashed into me that one time, I hate them kind of stuff. Like, you could just ram everybody into everything, and that's actually kind of fun. And there were quite a few races where that was the only way I was gonna make it across the finish line, by like ramming some guy off the course. But yeah, you start off with like a little tiny Fiat. I think it's like a Fiat 500. Like, they pretty much look like those smart cars from like 10 years ago. It's like a little dinky box car. Before you start moving up to the rally cars, you can get Indy Juniors and then other types of cars in there, but that is through natural progression. I mean, now technically you could buy these cars ahead of time in the game, but you're kind of wasting your in-game money on that, because the real meat and potatoes with that is that you're supposed to be using this money to upgrade your racing facilities. So you start off with this like little tiny garage, but then you could buy like an engine shop and an R&D shop, like all these different stuff. And just by having those buildings, they'll give you like a competitive edge. Like, your braking will be like 13% better, or like your car will now go like 5% faster by having this building, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, like it's honestly like surprisingly addictive. And like, there were times where I was actually worried that I wasn't going to finish in first place. Like, so far so good. But like, I'm in the IndyCar spot now, and like, it really, you know, it really drives home. Like, yeah, like, we're not taking this too seriously, but guess what? You better be taking these curves seriously, because otherwise you're going to like be stuck in 10th place the whole entire time. And so like, I think it's a very accessible title, for everyone. Now, whether like, but at the same time, like, I feel like the arcade title is a little misleading on it, because it's not like there's power-ups. It's not like, you know, you could throw like a blue shell, at somebody. Like, it doesn't really have what I'd call an arcade thing. But at the same time, it's definitely less serious than what iRacing usually makes. And that being said, like, I found it to be like a fun title. Like, it drives well, it handles well. You have a decent, like, amount of cars that you could choose from, like, once you've earned them all. And of course, like, you can, like, edit stuff on your driver, like what your track, like, you know, what your driving suit looks like, what your helmet, like, paint job is, like, what your car's livery is, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, like, I wish that there was more to the online mode than the lobbies. Like, I get why it's like that, but honestly, like, I thought that this was a pretty serviceable title. Like, it's really surprisingly solid.
I have a dumb question.
Yeah, sure.
I know nothing about cars being blind. What's a livery?
Oh, it's like a paint job, except it's like a, usually it's like a wrap, like that goes around like the car.
Not livery.
It's livery, yes, and it's actually a medieval term that has to do with, like, decorating your horses and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Thank you.
My tongue probably slipped a bunch, but yeah.
There you go. Game clock's anyway. In at $24.99. What are your thoughts on iRacing Arcade at $25?
$25, honestly, I'd say it's really worth it. Like, this... You know, if you're looking for, like, an easier, more accessible game than, like, you know, F1 2026, or, like, you know, some of the stuff that, like, Milestone releases, like, honestly, this is a pretty good way to go. Like, it feels like something that you could race with, like, you know, like, the kids. Are they going to like it? Probably not as much as, like, Sonic Racing. But, you know, honestly, it's a solid title through and through. Like, I'd recommend checking it out.
Very good. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Low Budget Repairs, developed by Gray 2 RGB, published by Simplicity Games and Playway. Released August 13th on Steam for $17.99. Manage renovations in 90s apartment blocks. Focus on quick profit and cut costs wherever possible. Client notices defects. Tough luck. The money's already in your pocket. Every day brings new challenges and decisions that could lead to fortune or trouble. Bree, what is Low Budget Repairs?
So this is a first-person flipper-style story game where you repair, paint, plaster, and clean places to get the hovel from hell and turn it into a house mostly above shithole. The story is pretty basic. You're gifted a home in Poland, and you're in the town of Hoofville, that is like some suburbs near the one-horse town, and you arrive on a bus and you have to hoof it to your new place from there. The town has hookers on the street corner by the bus.
Hell yeah.
And then after talking to a rather deaf neighbor and friend of your aunt who gave you the house, which is quite humorous, you find the house and it's a fucking dump. Gutters fall off just by looking at it. And then we get inside, and after we use the Z key to flip off some squatters, because you can just flip people off at the key there, we throw furniture at them to intimidate them out of the house. And then we can get down to business. Except this place is such a shithole. We need some money to get it fixed. We scrounge up some change to use a payphone and call our aunt's handyman friend who was clearly unclogging her pipes on the regular. And he's going to teach us how to be a handyman and give us some work while we learn. But he's stupid and electrocutes himself and comes to us as a ghost to show us how to carry on in his name. The humor in this is raunchy at times, silly at others, and I appreciated it immensely. You're encouraged to do a sloppy job. Steal the leftover paint and plaster, throw couches out of the window instead of carefully moving them, and smash things with a hammer to remove them, and it's pretty darn fun. Our mentor, whose name I can't pronounce, we'll just call him Mr. Z, tells us that we should learn to do things on the job rather than the safety of our own home. So we just take random jobs, offer shady promises, and generally sloppily slap things together and run with the cash. There is this, like, handyman organization whose acronym is SCREW, which I totally forget what it stands for, but that's, like, a perfect acronym for handyman-like organization. And Mr. Z is in the running to win, like, Handyman of the Year, so we have to help his ghost continue his business. God. So, yeah. That's a lot of the premise. And a lot of our conversations are with the ghost. And there's like this long kind of tutorial section through several missions. But yeah, the jobs are pretty simple, like fixing the tiles on the porch from where we broke them earlier by throwing a couch out of the window upstairs. We just continue throwing it off the balcony. And there's like a fire station on fire from a moonshine explosion. I don't know what they were doing in their fire station doing that, but they were like barbecuing on the inside and you put out the fire and fix it before the chief finds out. Either way, Hoofville is hot right now with work, and we've got to shoddily do whatever we can to get our hands on as much money as we can get away with. And that's the loop of the game. You drive to the job, you learn new skills, you slap things together, and then steal the leftover supplies and call the client to get paid and end the job. It's the humorous story beats that really make the wacky idea work. Yet, though, I expected this to be more creativity, and free with that. Like, you would have more freedom. And it's very strictly story-driven, mission-driven play, as opposed to the typical Flipper-style sandbox. So, that was not quite what I was expecting, but it's still interesting. So, there were segments like lockpicking that were interesting, but I found the button schemes a little awkward. You have a screwdriver, you can enter like an astral repair mode where you can fix furniture and stuff, and I actually like this mode a lot. There's a job board to help you raise money and buy supplies and fix up your house. A lot of jobs will have supplies for you, some of them will not, and then you'll have to go put up your own cash to get the job done, or go find something in your yard that totally works to just slap on the wall and hope that the customer won't notice. And you can stuff things in your car or your backpack for later use. I actually took all the plaster from like two jobs and started fixing my house and then regretted it because then I had to go to the store. So you'll need to buy supplies at the store. You have to drive there. You kind of get in the car and teleport there, which is nice. You interact with stuff on the shelf, hope you have the right thing and the money, and take it and drop it on the register to check out. Mr. Z warns you not to try and take anything from the store without paying, though, because the security guard's a real mean one. So, you know, he's got some scruples. The controls were fairly standard for mouse and keyboard, but I am not a standard user, and I really wish there was a controller support.
Yeah.
You have a key to load your tool wheel. Once you earn your new tools, there are things like spatulas and hammers and scrapers and claws and paintbrushes and shit that you can find on your wheel. There's a key to throw things like furniture. You can store things in your backpack, which is another key. And you've got to remember a lot of buttons. There's a key, obviously, to flip everybody off. And this is a flipper style game, so I suppose it's a very complete set of functions to have. But yeah, the other controls for actual things like wiring and stuff was kind of a challenge. Music in this was like Eastern Europop, which was kind of comical, but very 90s, so appropriate. The voice acting was actually pretty darn great, despite some clear errors in translation and it being like super fucking cheesy. Sadly, I can't honestly speak to the graphics in this because I did an oops before accepting this game. And I did not realize it was card.
It was what? You cut out like crazy right there.
Oh, it wanted a 2080 as the minimum graphics card, and I'm running lower. So I put the resolution settings down, and but I can't honestly say that the graphics were.
Is she cutting up pretty bad for anyone else, or is it just me?
Yeah, it's all of us.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on because I haven't moved.
Yeah,
I have not moved my microphone.
Yeah, it's weird.
Am I having internet issues?
I would have thought if anybody was, it would have been Joe right now.
Yeah,
I know. Are you hearing me now?
You're fine now. Maybe it was just a hiccup.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, as I was saying, I can't honestly say what the graphics were on this with all honesty, because I had to put it in lower settings to make it work on my computer. So it worked great, but I can't say anything other than that about it. Some not so great stuff. The first thing I had a sad about was obviously the lack of controller support, but that's me. Second sad right out of the gate about AI being used for translations, music, and some visual assets. They claim to not use AI gameplay and code. Some other things that needed improvement was the save system. Objects didn't always interact how they were supposed to, or they appeared in different ways than maybe they should. There were some mission issues where you couldn't complete a quest because items were broken or stuck to a wall. While the story was fun, the tasks got repetitive and there it was a lot more linear than it would be. It advertised itself as more of a Flipper style sandbox, but it was, you know, more linear. But the story was fun. It just didn't always make a lot of sense. So you just have to kind of accept it for being zany and move on. But they did release their fourth update today, and that addressed some of the things that I was having issues with. And they've been really listening to the players and trying to improve things quickly. So I have hopes that future patches down the road will improve some of the issues that I was also experiencing that were a little finicky or challenging or not progressing properly. I noticed today when I went back in that I was able to get a better save system or save point in the system. So that was good progress. So, yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, it seems like this is a really cool game that's marred by some AI usage.
Yeah, and yeah.
I mean, like, translations, music, and visual assets. That is a lot. I don't like that.
No, I don't either.
$18
But we have
bucks.
To give a verdict. Yeah.
We do. $18. What do you think of it?
So, in this case, using AI is not an automatic deny it for me. But I hate at this point that I can't just go to Steam to check whether my fully loaded potato is beefy enough to run a game. I have to check for AI content. It's exhausting weeding through this stuff to get to things that I'd much rather support with my time and money. But this game is funny and fun to take a different approach to the Flipper style games, and I want to play more. It's a decent price for what this is, and the idea of this game is just better than its execution. So I'm going to give this a try it, maybe wait for some patches and updates or a sale.
Sounds good. Moving on, let's talk about Mexican Ninja, developed by Mad Bricks, published by Amber, released August 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $16.99. Fast, chaotic, and full of attitude, Mexican Ninja is a 2.5D roguelike beat-em-up where you carve through Narcuzas in Nuevo Tokyo with tight controls, wild spirit powers, and Mexican jutsus. Slice, dodge, upgrade, and become the one and only Mexican Ninja. Jacob, tell me, what is going on in Mexican Ninja? And I just want to point out that whoever did the write-up for this page, learn what the Oxford comma is, please.
So, the story is about as frantic as that. And it is set in an alternate reality where Japan invaded Mexico with huge mechs, and they won. And so they took over. And the Yakuza from Japan teamed up with the Narcos. And so it's... Narcuzas. And it is your job as the lone Mexican ninja to wipe all these pendejos out. And
I
so
love this. This is so you dumb.
The storyline is amazingly dumb, but you know what? Like, the graphics look great. And you get to, so it is a 2.5D roguelite. And with that, you have to go through all these levels over and over again. Because you're going to die, but then you get resurrected again. And then, you know, you get to upgrade some of your stuff. You go back out there, you choose your powers. Like, you can have like a whirlwind thing. You can have these burritos that make you fart really badly and create like toxic gases around you. It really combines like the beat 'em up and roguelite, genres together really well. You have to drink soda to get your life back. But you know, you can also get upgrades that will decide, like, you know, how much life you can regen between levels. There's other other weapons and stuff like that. And as you progress through the game, you can also unlock skins, which will also have different weapons with them. So you could be beating up guys with this like huge fuck off hammer, other types of swords, which all these suits have their own special abilities. Like, one of them will give you more XP. Another one will give you, like a greater like weapon, quickness ability. But yeah, combat is fast and furious. There is some exploration that needs to get done in this game because, as I said, it's 2.5D. And if you only stick to like the main route that the game seemingly presents you with, you're going to miss out on all of this other stuff. It might just be some extra health stuff, some extra money that you can use later on. Or it could be other fights where you're, you know, obviously you're going to get to kick more ass, but it really helps to explore this game as much as you can because there's shit hidden everywhere. The boss fights are tough, but again, it's a boss fight. And because it's a roguelite, you're going to be doing this again and again and again until, like, you know, we're going to beat this into you until you get better. And then you're just going to be mowing through everybody with your sword and just honestly having a great time. You know, I wish I was better at dodging some of the enemies' attacks because, like, there is moves, like, there is upgrades that you could get where, like, you know, if you have such a combo, your weapon stats are going to be even more insane. And all it just takes is one guy to throw a knife at you from, like, across the way to ruin that combo. And it's just, when it, like, it gets so annoying, and then like you kill that guy, you know, like, and cut him up into a million pieces. But everything about this game is a lot of fun. The art's fun, the gameplay is great, the music's good. Like, it's just, this is a game that I feel like a lot of people are probably gonna sleep on, and you need to not sleep on this. You need to pick this up. Like, this is a lot of fun.
Very good. Clocks in at $16.99.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it. Buy it.
Then buy it for me.
No!
Next game. Okay, I will.
Okay, good.
I don't have money, though, so I gotta wait. Yeah. Next up, Hidden Cats in Barcelona, developed by Nukearts, published by Silesia Games, released August 26th. Xbox One, Series X and S, August 27th, Switch 1 and 2 for $3.99. Time to have a snack at a local churria and take a long stroll through Park Güell, because the hidden cats have arrived in ever-beautiful and sunny Catalonia. The nooks and crannies of Barcelona hide many adorable furballs. Can you spot them all? Bree, I'm guessing you found them all.
False, but I have a good reason. Welcome to another, welcome to another Brie Gushes Over a Hidden Cat game segment. So here's the deal. You get one really large scene and a bunch of smaller scenes to search through, this time based on Barcelona, Spain. You get hand-drawn art that colors in as you find cats hidden around scenes. There are special cats you can find based on things like Salvador Dali, or just cool people's cat photos that are fans of the game, or even cards based on famous locations and architectural marvels of Barcelona. The large scene has 200 regular cats, a bunch of special ones, and 20 people to find in the scene. And when you're done, there's music and fireworks for your reward, along with a bunch of achievements, if you're playing on Xbox or Steam. And while you're finding those special cats, you're unlocking six smaller locations. And once you finish the smaller ones, you get one more large scene done in a different style called La Rambla. And the small scenes have like 500 or 50 to 100 cats and people to find. And they take you to places like a churro cafe, a grocery market, a church, and a park. In the small scenes, there is an additional challenge where you find some of the cats are further hidden or behind things that wiggle to get your attention. A new quality of life feature in this game is the option to do a progressive coloring of the scene after all objects are found in the area, which is the easy mode, or a final coloring only after the objects are found in the scene, which is the moderate mode or the harder mode, or call it. There are no achievement penalties for doing this on easy. Ching!
Yay!
Some more recent quality of life stuff to mention in case you missed the last couple of releases is that you can hit X to temporarily remove the UI on top of the screen to more easily find the cats. You get great art, festive sounds and music, a fun cat finding game with over 800 find, some other things to know about the game, so many meows Those meows are there to let you know the cat is nearby and help you find them. You can adjust multiple sounds individually. There's a dark mode and a colorblind modes, and you can change cursor sensitivity. And I just want to point out one more time that with just about every new hidden cat released for several of these releases now, there have been some kind of quality of life improvement, and I'm really pleased that they're listening to their players and continuing to improve. And I don't know if I have anything else to say. It's super fun.
It's $4. I don't even need to ask with these, but it's $4.
It's a no-brainer. Yeah. Good price, fun game.
No, don't jump to conclusions. You got to think long and hard about this one.
All right.
$4.
Fun game. Cute art. Please buy it.
Okay. That works for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did buy this one already.
Sweet.
Yeah. Next up, No More Slimes, developed and published by Minimum Studio, released August 20th as an Xbox Play Anywhere game for $9.99. Slime Rebellion. Small and adorable slimes have started a bouncing rebellion, filling up the entire screen. Dive right into this unstoppable commotion. Jacob, how many slimes did you murder in No More Slimes?
I have killed over 100,000.
Good.
Yeah.
Goodness. Those poor slimes, they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, they did. They existed. Crashing my castle and shit. Anyway. So
what is No More Slimes?
No More Slimes is... it's like half clicker, like... And it's not really like a survivor's game. But essentially, you've got this big... big circle that, you know, that's where all your powers come from. But you also have these, like, little minions that you can have up to three of them. Going on, running around on the map at any given time. And there's various classes, like there's like a mage, there's a knight, there's a cavalry guy, there's a priest, like there's the beginner, there's a thief, all that kind of stuff. And as you go through each level, you have to kill a certain amount of slimes per level, within a certain amount of time. So you can clear it. And of course your minions might die and the minions cannot be brought back to life. So, I don't want to say it's like,
well, that run, they'll come back on your next run.
Well, yeah, they come back on your next run, but like, let's say that you're on like level, like, or like, you know, like level, like 5-7 and they're all dead. They're not going to come back for level 5-8.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so I don't want to say that you're screwed if all your minions are gone, but you might as well consider it to be game, like, you know, well, that run over until then. But yeah, so you have to kill so many slimes, and there's various different types of slimes that are available, and they drop slime that you use to upgrade all your shit, mostly for your minions, but it can also upgrade, like, you know, how long all the levels are, how much HP your minions have, like how big of a weapon attack area you have. There's also these main weapons that only you get to carry, and they refill at a certain amount. Like there's a sniper rifle, a Molotov cocktail, a cannon, and an ice spear that could be unlocked, and those, you know, you throw those out onto the field as you see fit. But you also get to upgrade your minions' weapons as well. It's a lot of upgrading. It's very clicker-ish, but not. Because honestly, you don't have to do any clicking with this game, which is nice. You just have to move your cursor all over the place and then activate your minions' powers as you're having them run across.
I was
going
to say that takes it away from the one-handed gameplay that you enjoy when having to do all the minion
survivors
abilities.
Types.
Because you're not going to beat this if you don't use those minion abilities.
Yeah, no. Like the mage and the warrior, like they. Like they've got some great stuff going for them.
I think the cavalry dude too.
I haven't used them yet. I unlocked them today, but I haven't used them yet. But I have them upgraded pretty far. Like I've been upgrading everybody as I can. But yeah, like honestly, this game is fairly addictive. I wish that there was more than one music track that gets used in the game. But like I just kept coming back to it, kind of like yet another zombie survivors. Like, it was just like, all right, well, one more run and then I'll start all the way back at the beginning so I can unlock more stuff. Now, get granted, more
currency, like, and just let it run by itself.
I have it so I can let it run by itself for the first three worlds.
Yeah.
I'm really, but once like level four takes over, like I really have to like start, you know, using my my minions, the mage's fire, like fire asteroid kind of thing.
Yeah,
like her power.
I'm in like the double digit world now. Like once you beat the game, it gives you a couple more levels to go through. I don't know how far it goes because I've only gotten to like the second one after that because of how difficult they are. But I am so addicted to this game. This is a game.
It's a pretty simple game, but like
we decided to cover it. I got this game, I played it, and I'm like, we need to cover this. And I contacted the studio, and I'm like, can we review this? And now you're talking about it. And I love this one. I had a great time with this one. There is one problem they are aware of, that one of the achievements isn't working. I think some people got it, but it hasn't popped for me. I'm waiting for hopefully some kind of update to come along and get the.
I was gonna say, there's three people on True Achievements who've 1K'd it.
I'm wondering if they got that achievement before an update broke it, possibly.
That's what I would figure, yeah. I mean, I didn't see who the three people are. Or, yeah, it's three people. I'm not familiar with any of those names. Like,
yeah.
But they've got game time that...
Look it up.
But they've got game time that indicates, you know, that they weren't fucking around either.
Yeah.
Like one guy has almost 40 hours. Oh my god, why is
my TV so loud? Holy Jesus.
Like the second person to 1K, they've got almost 40 hours on this game.
Yeah, I don't have that many.
Yeah, I mean, I don't either. I'm at a, you know, respectable. Oh, according to True Achievements, I've only played for 3.5. I know that ain't right, because I've definitely tossed way more time into this. The latest one I've killed is the silver boss. I think that's level 7.
I wish you could see my screen. Yeah, I fired it up to see if the achievement popped, and nothing yet. So, I want my achievement to pop. I have all but one. It's a $10 game. What are your thoughts on
it? Hold up. There is one thing that I don't like about this, and that is the upgrade system. Like the skill tree area. Like, I mean, you can call it a skill tree, but it's really just, yeah, it's how you upgrade stuff with all the currency. Yeah, well, first off, it's gigantic, but also it's an absolute pain in the ass to try to figure out what you actually need to upgrade and what you don't and what you can upgrade, because that little red dot is not always where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so like I've had to through every single square just to make sure that, you know, it's as it's as upgraded as it can be. And honestly, it's an absolute pain in the ass. Like, I wish that there was like some sort of like button you could press that would just show you like, you know, what's the closest one that you're able to upgrade or something like that. And just take you to it, because the skill tree is huge and it's not exactly the easiest thing to navigate.
Like, have ones that you can still upgrade, have them glow or something.
Something I think
that would be an easier solution.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, I'm loving this game. Like, it's totally, how much does this game cost?
$10.
Totally worth it. You're going to get addicted. Like, play it.
Very good. And I agree with that one, because that's why we're covering it, because I bought it. Next up, Horripilant, developed by Pass Game Studio, published by Black Lantern Collective, released August 27th, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $9.99. Kill your god, become worthy. Horripilant is a chilling incremental dungeon crawl through the horrors of a forgotten underworld. Combining idler, puzzler, and auto-battler elements, you'll fight, mine, and think your way through the depths of a forsaken dungeon. With each step, you'll grow stronger, but beware, every boon has its burden. Aki, it's your turn. What is Horrorplant?
Okay, so this is an idle clicker game, and I've totally turned this off, at least to sleep. That's about the only time it's been off since I got this for review. So I might have a problem.
Maybe.
And yeah, so basically in this game, you start off as some schmuck. You're in an area and you're told, hey, yeah, go here and beat up on the stick a little bit so you can get some wood. Because everybody needs wood first thing in the morning, apparently. And then you use that to start upgrading some basic gear that you have. Because now you're a knight for reasons. And then once you've upgraded some of that stuff, it says, okay, now go to the dungeon. Dun, dun, dun. And you go into the dungeon, and then it starts idling both, because you've bought things to start tearing down the wood without you having to click on it, and now you're in the dungeon, and that also automatically runs as you hopefully don't get yourself killed like a stupid bitch.
Jacob, do you want to make your wood joke?
Jacob is the wood joke. He's the one gathering all the people's wood.
He is.
Yeah, everybody could use some wood in the morning.
How does it take you so long to reply?
Because I have myself muted during other people's reviews.
How long does it take you to unmute?
Entirely too long.
Well, I have to click over to Discord, and then I have to hit the unmute.
Go ahead, anyways.
So you automatically start fighting against the critters, and it will automatically put you to the next level. You also have a few other options that you can click just to have things automatically done. Every time you go down a level, you get three options that you can pick one of that are different upgrades that you can get. They're always randomized. They're anything from here's 10% of whatever your region is now added to your region. Here's 5% of your damage added to it. Things like that, all the way to here's a percent chance that if an enemy hits you, they get smacked with the same amount of damage because fuck them. Nice. And yeah, and obviously the further you go down, the more of these you have, the more they build up, the more awesome it is. I've gone down far enough numerous times where I was attacking like every 0.01 seconds.
God.
So yeah, it was fun. I still died. And yeah, obviously creatures are getting stronger, having more health as you go down, so you eventually start to lose. But you can also choose to have the game automatically start picking whatever it wants for your upgrades, so you can just completely let that shit play out on its own, which is what I've been doing. Because I go down to like level 70, and that takes like a 50-ish minutes to do if you're starting at level 1 like I do. But as you go through it, every creature that you defeat leaves you some meat. That meat you get to use to upgrade your storage. For each one of the different elements that you have, you get you start off with just wood. Once you get 250,000 wood, you're able to open up rock. Once you have 250,000 rock, you open up iron. And those are your three elements to upgrade your weapons with. And meat, for some reason, allows you to upgrade the storage of all three of them. I don't understand why, but hey, to each their own, I guess. as you level up your storage, obviously you can hold more, and with that you can eventually buy upgrades that allow you to basically raise that item up to a higher standard. So instead of just hitting a twig, it grows into a really short tree and then to like a pine tree. And then I haven't noticed any visual changes after that, but you can even unlock the ability to continue to raise that even higher. And that basically just gives you, every time you do it, it doubles how much of a resource you get every time it claims a resource, which makes things move faster. And while you're doing all of this, as you go down through the dungeon, you're unlocking a helix or something like that. It's a weird crystal thing. And there's a talking head inside a giant chasm that will allow you to basically rebirth yourself back at one, obviously. It's an idle clicker. And you use that stuff to upgrade your different abilities and stuff for your next run. So one of the primary ones I've been getting is, oh, every time I go down into the dungeon and I hit through a new level, I get more and more of the crystals so I can upgrade more of the tree, as well as ones that are like, oh, now you get x4 or whatever, idle production or things like that. There's all sorts of stuff. There's like 20 different upgrades and multiple levels of almost all of them that you can get into and really just start just breezing through this shit. Nice. And the whole point...
I was going to say, let's discuss the features on this on the store page, and you tell me how accurate they are.
Okie dokie.
Incrementally gain and collect materials.
Yes.
Combat horrific foes over 1,000 floors in the dungeon.
I know there's at least 1,000 floors. I've only gotten to like 74 so far in any of my runs.
Get good.
But there are 1,000 because there's an achievement for going from level 1 all the way to 1,000 in a single run. Huh?
You're going to get that one, aren't you?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah. Solve puzzles and explore the depths of your camp.
There are some minor puzzles. You can find keys in various places to unlock doors, and there's also codes that you can find that you have to use in other areas to open more places around your camp. And all of those stay permanently open the moment you open them, so that's nice.
Cool. Upgrade your gear to venture deeper.
Yep.
And then... meet God.
I think that is the face in the hole. Maybe. I'm not sure. There are a lot of weird creatures in here that you get to interact with, and I don't know what the fuck any of them are, but they're all creepier than shit.
Well, you're going to find out in due time, because you're already addicted to this one, and I already know your answer. This is $10. What's your verdict?
Yeah, very much so. I am right now, my character from going through the dungeons just on this run is at 2,282. So, yes, go buy the game.
Very good.
Still haven't made it to floor 100 yet.
All right, let's move on to Birds Watching, developed by Studio Ortica, published by Dark Product. Released August 19th, Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $5.99. An endless global fire has consumed the planet. You are the last human alive, stranded on a mountain peak, untouched by the flames below. Your days are spent exploring the mountain, watching birds through your binoculars, and cataloging the species that escaped there with you. It's quiet, peaceful, isolated. Till something changes. Bree, what is Birds Watching?
So, this is by the dev of Loan Shark, which I reviewed some time back, and the publisher of Rat Shaker, which Jacob reviewed some time back, and I loved both those games. They are weird in a way that appeals to me, and I want you to keep that in mind as I talk about this game. There are some warnings right at the beginning about explicit and vulgar sexual language. They are not joking. The game also allows violence against animals, but never demands it, unless you are a completionist for achievements.
How bad is the language? Because it's only T-rated.
Would it make me blush?
It's not that. It's more the situational stuff than the language itself. I don't want to give too much away because there's a very interesting, fucked up conversation. But yeah, some of the related dialogues cannot be skipped, so you'll have to use your best judgment as to whether or not this is a good game for you. But yeah, humans ruin the world. It's all on fire. You're probably the last human. You live on a mountain. You watch birds. Life is good. You built a wall to keep out the world. You grow grain. You survive. Your only friend is a bird you named Gary. I let chat name the bird when I stream this. You name the bird what you want. Gary is a spotted owl. You made a special glove for him. And he comes and he hangs out with you. And then one day, a signal comes across your radio. It's another human. His name is Kaio. And he demands your loyalty immediately. And at the top of the mountain is a military fort that he's convinced has canned food. And Kaio and his people are coming to get it with or without your help. Then Gary, the bird, talks to you. He could talk the whole time. In fact, all the birds can talk if you know the password. From here, the story becomes a series of choices you make. Do you help Kaio? Do you help the birds? Or yourself? How you do things matters too, and it gets weird, and I wish I could tell you how weird without ruining the story. I had a conversation with one bird that led to a really messed up conversation about pussy. That bird was way too obsessed with human sex.
Jeez.
There was another bird obsessed with cloacas, and you just have to play it. In general, the birds don't like when you meet them. One of the first ones I talked to called me an asshole and threatened to shit my mouth.
Jacob's favorite bird.
There are alternative goals in the game that will reward you with achievements and, more importantly, story conclusions you can interpret for yourself. Find all the signs and read them, the pages, dead bodies on the mountain, stuff like that. There are items for you to find that you can use for different endings. You'll watch birds. You'll lure them in with worms. You'll talk to them. You'll convince them to your side or not. There's an internal clock for the game, and there are story beats that will make you hurry up for certain plot points. There's a stamina bar. You can run for a little while, but running is noisy, and you're trying to, you know, sneak up on birds. You also have a sound bar that shows how noisy you are so you don't scare those birds away. And there's a bird book so you can get hints on how to find all the birds if you choose to go that route. I didn't really explain one of the main mechanics, and this is bird watching, obviously. You have to use your binoculars on the birds to identify them, and then they'll have a name over them and you kind of discover them for the first time, which allows you to talk to them if you give them the password, which is not clearly explained in the button pressing. It's a little weird. But once you figure it out, it's fantastic that you can have these conversations with birds. There are at least three different endings I could figure out according to the achievements in my own playthroughs. It is not a super long game, other than needing to play it a couple of times to get all the achievements, but it is an experience worth having, in my opinion. The graphics were nothing to write home about, but it wasn't bad either. There was an element of fog and a softness to it that was a little surreal, and that really worked for the game. Overall, I think this had a lot more polish than Loan Shark in terms of graphics, in terms of story, and it's just overall a better game. But it is fucked up. I did run into a few glitchy things. I got physically stuck in place and had to back out to the main menu and reload, and it solved my issue, but it reloaded me in the starter building. There were some sounds that lingered too long sometimes. And just the fact that there's some fucked up things you'll have to deal with in this game and potentially do if you want all the endings and achievements. But that's psychological horror for you. Yeah. I had a good time with this game.
Very good. Not an expensive one. It clocks in only $6. What are your thoughts?
This is a weird one to rate. Do I give it a buy it knowing it's fucking weird and I would have a hard time selling this to the average person? Do I go middle of the road and say, try it because you might just like it? Or for that price, do I just give it a fuck it? Why not? Either way, I say it's worth a look. If you like Loan Shark or Rat Shaker, play this one too. If you have no clue what I'm talking about and you want to experience something weird, give this a try. But seriously, it's $6. Just do it.
Cool. Next up, with Eyes of Ice, developed by Ibihime, published by Rattleika Games. It released August 21st, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. Dying of frostbite, Greta is left to wonder how she found herself in such a dire situation. Perhaps it began with Kai agreeing to stay the night, or with that kiss that she almost shared with Nathaniel. Perhaps it was when she journeyed from her home to work as a housemaid in the distant fishing village. For Greta, meeting Nathaniel Johansson was love at first sight, but there are some loves which cannot, or perhaps not, or perhaps should not, be. Jacob, what is With Eyes of Ice?
So With Eyes of Ice is a visual novel set in Iceland. So let me make this clear about this. I mean, like, because I was about to be like, you play as, and it's like, no, you actually don't. This is a visual novel that you're just reading the whole novel. There are no decisions to make. There are no multiple endings. It's just, you're just watching it and reading the text. So the story follows, this girl who, she's seen as like an outcast in her town because her mom died during childbirth and her grandma is like the town witch. And so like, whoa, she must be the granddaughter of a witch. Ugh, we're not going to deal with her. And so she doesn't have a lot of friends and pretty much her existence is very poor. And one night she decides that she's just going to run out into the snow and chase after this guy, who had left some time ago. But when she leaves, she's just in like a nightgown. She doesn't have anything on her feet. And pretty much like she's going to die in the snow. And it seems like she's dying. But then she wakes in this bed and like one of the guys that, you know, obviously she's going to become involved with, is just like, oh, well, you know, I'm glad you're awake. You know, like you were in such a bad state when I found you, blah, 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 blah. And so like, she's wondering, am I dead? Am I not? But she eventually recovers and, we're going through memories and we're going through present time, you know, of her past and like her relationships with these guys, like, and one of them was married. One of them was like this rich, you know, guy who, you know, that she grew up with, and like, you know, had feelings for, but of course, like he's rich, she's poor, blah, 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 blah. And there's other people involved in drama, like, you know, you're a poor girl. You shouldn't be seen with my boy. And there's even some murder and intrigue, or at least implied murder. I mean, it doesn't show. It is murder that is kind of, it's not shown, but like you see a knife and then you see like one of the ladies like laying on the floor, like kind of bloody. So, you know, somebody got shanked. But yeah, it's a really well-written novel. It kept me interested the whole time that I was, reading it. And the art is nice, that goes along with it. And it animate, like, it's not animated, but like the pictures change enough, you know, to keep you interested that you're not staring at the same thing or like for 10 minutes straight, as the dialogue goes on. Yeah. And the music is nice too. But as I said at the very beginning, you're not making any decisions on this. Like you are literally just there for the ride. Yeah. And it's a good novel.
Is it worth the ride? It's a $15 novel. Is it worth reading?
Yeah, I thought it was. Like it had plenty of twists and turns with it. And like the characters were interesting enough. You know, if you're an achievement hunter, like you could just set this game on auto, and just like have the dialogue just breeze right on through. But honestly, like you're doing yourself a disservice on that. Like this is a pretty good novel. I enjoyed it.
Very good. Next up, Arms Dealer, developed by CoroPixel Studio, published by Dark Product. It released August 19th on Steam for $5.99. Build a black market empire from debt to unimaginable wealth in this deep strategy trading simulation. Buy weapons, manage risk, evade authorities, and profit from global conflict. Bree, what is Arms Dealer?
So this is another game published by Dark Product, and maybe the most normal thing I've seen come through.
That's saying something.
Oh my gosh, really? So I was saying this is the most normal thing that this publisher has done that I've seen. In this strategy game with roguelike elements, you are a roguelite elements, I should say. You are a rookie arms dealer. You have a screen with information on the product, the price history, the daily deals. It's kind of like Space Warlord Organ Trading Simulator from Strange Scaffold in that regard. You've got 30 days to prove you can hack it in the industry or get disappeared like the other failures. And Big Eddie, the crime lord, doesn't want you to waste his time. Basically, on your list of daily deals, you have the opportunity to buy weapons at certain prices that fluctuate over time. You want to buy low, sell high, but until you've played a few runs, it's hard to know what is a good price for something on your first day or two because there's very little price history information for you. You start out with zero money, so you best hit up a loan shark and hope that you can pay them back. If you can't, that's okay. Just run or fight with the weapons you own. If you use one of your weapons, or sell it though, which sucks. And then interest will be added to your debt, and maybe you live to make money another day. In addition to needing to pay back or fight off loan sharks, you have to deal with police raids you can bribe or run away from. You'll have gang fights, or you can buy merchandise from a mysterious black market contact that will randomly show up and offer you really good deals. Nervace also has the ability to heal you. You can take out the loans, as I mentioned. You can buy mystery boxes. And finally, upgrades. There's temporary ones and permanent ones. Also, healing at the hospital is expensive, but you gotta do what you gotta do. But yeah, upgrades. You can do temporary ones on a per-run basis. Per-run things you can do are like lessen the amount of times you might run into police or have to pay them off or fight them or whatever. You might spend a couple thousand and get the mysterious black market chances raised for the run. And then there are permanent upgrades you can only get after a successful run that you survive. They do similar things to the temporary, but allow you some like starter cash or longer playtime. So a successful run is where you've sold all your stock, made money, and still have health at the end of your 30 days. Having a certain net worth by a certain date will buy you more time to impress Big Eddie and extends your 30-day run. You might actually get closer to like 36 days if you're doing really well. And these permanent upgrades are more along the lines of like 300,000 to 500,000 in cost versus the like 1 to 2,000 cost for temporary ones, which is pretty reasonable. I think I made like my third run or fourth run, I probably made around 200,000 pretty clean after I sold everything. So like it's doable within a couple of runs to get some money and get some permanent upgrades. Graphics wise, the menus and title screen look like cut up letters of a magazine. Some note, you know, the rest of the graphics are like pixel art, or it's at least a filter. The weapon models spin on the screen, which is most of the motion you get in this game. It's really simplistic, and that's not a bad thing. And it's all in like a sepia tone. The music is cool, but sadly, there's like one track. The bass has a little kick to it. It's got some jazzy overtones, little bluesy undertones, while being fairly modern. Like, it's not a bad track. It's just, you know, I turned it off after a while. This was a pretty simple interface, nothing too fancy, not much in the way of a story, but it was interesting enough that it kept my attention for a bit. You had, I had, like I said, that decent run pretty early on, learned a little strategy, got an idea of what decent prices would be for, say, a Beretta or an AK-47. And sometimes it's about strategy, sometimes it's about luck on a run. I had a surprisingly good time with this one.
Very good. It is another cheaper one. It clocks in at $6. What are your thoughts?
It's inexpensive. It's simple to pick up and learn. I'm going to go with a try it, though, partly because it didn't capture me as much as I'd hoped it might. Like, it just didn't have the staying power for anything other than short bursts. So I think it's worth a try it.
Gotcha. Cheap enough that you might fuck it. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. That's always good.
Yeah.
So it sounds like two good ones from Dark Product. Which one would you give the win to between the two of them?
Absolutely Birds Watching. I think I'm going to put Birds Watching on my favorite indies list for this year just because, the list grows over the year and some games get knocked off over time, but I think I'm going to throw it on there for now and see how it does by the end of the year.
Very good. Well, we may have an extra key to give away thanks to Dark Product. Ooh, so stay tuned and on a future episode, we will put that one up for offer. So
nice.
Follow us on the Twitches and hang out with us.
Awesome.
Next up, Arcade Archives 2 Ninja Imaki, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. It released August 19th on Xbox, Play Anywhere, Switch 2, and PS5 for $9.99. Ninja Imaki is a shooter released by Nichibutsu in 1986. Take control of the young hero Shinbei and fight to rescue the princess from the evil spirit army. Pick up scrolls to gain access to 8 different kinds of ninja magic. Use them wisely, and they'll be the key to advancing through the game. Jacob, what is Ninja Imaki?
So, Ninja Imaki is a pretty weird game. You're playing as this ninja who has to save this princess from, like, this, like, spirit ghostly spirit army. And pretty much what happens is that the very first level is kind of like a vertical shoot 'em up, although you have way more like ability to like fly all over the place. Kind of reminded me of Time Pilot. If you've ever played that one from way back in the day. So your movement's kind of like that all over the place. You're just shooting a bunch of spirits until and like weird looking monster things, like there's eyeballs floating in the air and like these like devilish looking ghost things that are flying at you. And then the rest of the game seems to be on foot. What makes this kind of different is that there's these scrolls that you could pick up throughout the levels as you kill all these enemies. And the scrolls will give you access to this ninja magic for about like 15 or 20 seconds, like thereabout. And like, you could spam it as much as you'd like. And some of it's pretty helpful, some of it's not. But there's like 7 or 8 different powers that you can use. And of course, like, you'll need to try them all, figure out which one works for you.
I like the spread shot.
Yeah. Like I like the one that like was just like the kunais, like going all in like different directions and stuff. Like, cause anyway, I was just killing guys all over the map. Like even ones that like, you know, like they might just be like just off of the screen, like from where I could see them on the screen. And it's like, I just walk over and like they're dead. So that was helpful. But yeah. And so like the on foot levels, they're pretty much like just these like giant mazes. And thank God, that there's arrows pointing as to like where you need to be going to either meet the next boss or just move to the next level. Because I would have gotten lost. But yeah, like it's a pretty accessible game. If you're playing the Japanese version, you die like one hit, you're dead. But the American version, you get like 3 chances before you're dead. So, you know, the American one is slightly easier, but you know, you're still gonna die pretty quick. Like it's a tough game, but it's pretty fun. Like I really enjoyed this one, and I'm glad that Hamster is giving this one like its new time to shine, because I've never seen this game before. I wasn't familiar with it, and the first time I fired it up, I was like, what is this trippy shit that I'm looking at? Like this is absolutely bizarre. But yeah,
it's a pretty different kind of shooter, with the mix between the flight section and the on foot sections. I thought the boss, like the frog boss, I still can't get through.
Yeah, like this is one that, you know, I definitely would be sinking quarters into. And I do appreciate that, like, there seems to be an actual story to it. I can't figure out what it is, but it seems like there's a story. So I don't know if it's based on like Japanese legend or something like that, or like, you know, a story that was like popular around the time. But yeah, like I think it's pretty cool. Like I think it's definitely worth checking out, especially for $10.
Nice. Well, this is one that was released originally in 2024 as part of the Arcade Archives series, and it got ported to Arcade Archives 2. So if you already own it on Switch or PS4, you can upgrade for $2.99. If you're a new purchase, it's $10. What is your verdict at $10?
Absolutely. yeah, this is definitely one of the more solid ones that has been released in the Arcade Archives 2 series as of late. So I know on Tuesday, like, there was a few that I was just like, no, this ain't it. This one's it.
See, that's why, like, I wanted you to get all three at once, because balance.
I know, because demeanor. Then it would have been like, then it would have been like a no, meh, and yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I know, but I didn't get a chance to play this for it.
You got one lined up for next week, so you'll have that to look forward to.
Heck yeah. Which, always looking forward to the Arcade Archives name. Titles.
Satan of Saturn.
Yeah, I saw that and I was just like, real curious about this one.
Well, we'll find out next week. But for tonight, we got one last game to talk about, and that is Dark Reflection, developed by Stamina Zero and Slay Boorman, published by Stamina Zero. Released August 20th as an Xbox Play Anywhere title for $4.99. When your best friend vanishes, you must enter the Dark Reflection, a hostile, warped copy of your own reality. Here, familiar places are dangerous and friendly faces cannot be trusted. The Dark Reflection is a classic side-scrolling pixel art adventure packed with action, puzzles, and heavy metal energy. Stamina Zero were awesome enough to hook us up with some extra copies of this, and I think we should start off the review by giving a copy away. What do you think?
I love it.
Giveaway draw. Congrats to Richard, who entered for Javors. We will get that taken care of momentarily. Bree, tell us, what is Dark Reflection?
So the first thing to mention is the box art reminded me of Beavis and Butthead, which is great because the game seems to be set in the 90s with this like Terminator 2 poster and a Metallica Black Album poster on the wall in Dennis's bedroom. That's us, Dennis. Our best friend and neighbor is Max. He's in the band with us. Max bought some foreign thrash metal band's rare album, and the liner notes include a ritual for opening a portal to a dimension where we can meet Satan. So that's what we're going to do. This is like a point-and-click adventure, but less on the point-and-click and more with the...
Oh, hold on, we're getting raided.
Oh!
Matt is screaming at us.
I don't know why!
Thank you, Lloyd Berry, for coming in with a raid party. Welcome in, everyone. We are discussing Dark Reflection, which is our final review of the night. We just started talking about this one. Bree, how about you just start us over? What was Dark Reflection, since Lloyd just came in?
So this is set in the 90s. It's an adventure game. Our best friend gets a rare thrash metal album, and he's gonna use the liner notes to do a ritual to open a portal to a dimension where we can meet Satan. So this is like an old point and click adventure with less of the point and click. You do have like inventory, so there's elements of that, but you can actually like walk around side scrolling and varying things. It's got dark humor, it's got heavy metal. The graphics are retro style, reminded me of, you know, a lot of the 90s adventure games, side scrolling pixel art. You pick up items in your inventory, you select them to use them at the appropriate time, and generally puzzle your way through scenarios toward one of multiple endings. You have a knife at some point that you can stab on the X button. Don't accidentally hit that while trying to hit Y to get to your inventory to see if you can bribe your friend's younger sister and stab at her death instead and get a game over and have to start at the last save point. Story was interesting, but to be honest, I was not a big fan of some of the exposition. When you click on items with in a room, there are speech bubbles that come up with information about the item or the room, the thing you clicked on, or like a dialogue with other characters. There's no voice acting, so it's all text. And wow, wall of text. It was so much info or dialogue, it was overwhelming, and it took up most of the screen. So I don't know what the solution to that is, but it was a little bit much, which brings me to my next point. Saves seemed arbitrary. I didn't see a way to make a manual save, and there were just some load points that were kind of useless, and I mostly had to start over. I managed to get back to where I was and move on, only to find that combat was a thing, and my health bar suddenly mattered. So In the story, we get the ritual done. The portal opens to the dark reflection. That's the whole point of the story, of the world we know. But suddenly, we have combat. And the combat kind of sucks. This is side-scrolling, so you have to walk up to where you think the hitbox is and hit the X button to do a really close swipe with your kitchen knife. I died so many times and kept getting the same checkpoints over and over. No matter how much I felt like I got further, I just did not get another checkpoint. It got frustrating for me pretty fast. The boundary box for the enemies and events were really close up, and more often than not, I'd bump into something and do damage before I could even hit or use an item on it. So, I think this game had a lot of potential, but I had a tough time with it, and I could not finish it. I will go back to it and give it another chance, but I got frustrated enough that I had to put it down and walk away.
What would you do to improve the experience, or what kept you from wanting to play it more?
The boundary box, or the hitbox, was a little too close. For as short a weapon as you had. So that was really the thing. And then I mentioned also the exposition being a little bit long and lengthy. I don't know that it was smaller text, or because that's never a good idea either, because then people can't read it. Maybe multiple boxes, or just like being more concise with the language, would have been better in some of those cases. I mean, the game is pretty short. You should be able to get through it in like an hour, according to like people online. I could not, and I got frustrated.
How's the music?
The music was okay. I mean, heavy metal, you've got that, you know, kind of thing going for you. It's got a good vibe to it.
I like the rock, so I might have to check out the soundtrack at least. On the plus side, it's not an expensive game. It clocks in at $5.
Right.
What are your thoughts on Dark Reflection?
Well, it's not a deny it, because it's a playable game. It just ultimately wasn't for me. Like I said, the combat was not great. I struggled with the lack of save points. That's the other thing that, you know, when you're asking, more save points would be better.
Yeah.
It's a great price for what should be about an hour worth of game if you aren't struggling. I'm going to give this a try it. And hope that maybe you had a better time than I did, or they make some slight tweaks to the game.
All right. Or if all else fails, you could win a copy, right?
You could win a copy, and that would be great too.
Should we draw another winner?
Yeah.
Let's draw another winner. Congrats to Latino Heat. Just won a copy of Dark Reflection. We will get that code over to you momentarily. But that
isn't the last person who win one for Latino Heat.
No, Javors.
No.
Oh, Javors. Okay.
I don't even know if Javors is around tonight, so I messaged him to see if he wants the code or not.
So. All right.
But that is it for this episode. We made it through. Only took us 2.5 hours.
Woo!
Only. I don't know what I'm playing for music. I'll just pick something and play it. How's that?
Sounds good.
Pick your nose and play it.
Maybe I will.
Good.
What do you think about that?
Yay!
I guess that's the end of the show.